Hello and welcome to an unedited episode 12 of Intruder Theatre in the Making podcast. I'm your host, Remy Rehoboam. Thank you so much for coming back. Now, this time around, I just thought, okay, why don't I just leave it as it is and record a podcast episode without changing anything, amending. If there is any fuck-ups, sorry, fuck it. I don't give a fruit. To be quite honest, so let's see if I can actually develop and deliver, that's the word, deliver that monologue for 20 or 30 minutes and tell you more about my solo piece. So as you might remember, in episode 11, I was talking about feedback and the redrafting and finally submitting to the BBC Writers' Room competition. Now, you also might remember from my previous episodes where I talked about working as a face-to-face Polish interpreter. Now, around that time, that was 2017, I was working and running around London and interpreting various assignments, on various assignments, in, for example, Stratford, and then I ran to Holborn and Archway, and back to Holborn, and then back to Stratford, and helping Polish people with their language needs, whether it was leukemia, whether it was benefits or mental health assessments, I've done it all. So that was my day. I didn't have really a lot of time to think about what was happening with my piece, and I think that's the best way to go about it. You just get on with your life, you do things, and you don't think about, what's going to happen to my piece? Are they considering? Is it going to progress or not? I really had other things to think about, especially as I was, running around, and I really needed to make sure that I was everywhere on time, because I hated, and I still hate, being late. So I'm running around, and all of a sudden I get an email from the BBC Writers Room, and it told me that my piece got to the next round of the competition. Now, I am not really sure whether, maybe some of you probably, you may not know how it all works. By the way, the writing competitions, how it is that when you submit, you either, they tell you that you didn't get any further with your play, or it's, if you do get a little bit further, they tell you that it was shortlisted and they announce the winner. Most of the time, they don't say anything, you don't get any feedback, and that's it. But with the BBC Writers' Room, what happens is that each reader reads 10 pages of a particular script or play, and if they like it, it moves on to the next stage, which is that the next person reads 20 pages, and if they don't like the 10 pages, that's it, that's the end of the journey. So I got that email telling me that it moved on to the next stage, meaning that someone liked the very first 10 pages of my play, which was great. I do remember the fact that I had previously submitted my play to the BBC Writers' Room, and that was, I think, in 2015, but it was a completely different version, completely different draft. Now, with the new one, with the new version in 2017, the intuitive version, I kind of felt, oh, okay, great, but I wasn't very much surprised, because I thought, well, at least I know that it got to the same stage as it was before. So that was always reassuring. And that was really it. I don't remember these emails a lot. I just remember that I saw them, I think, somewhere on the bus, on the tube, between jobs, and I was just preparing for, another assignment to interpret. And then another email I got, it was 2 weeks after that, and it said that, it went through the next stage, and then it's going to the next stage. And the next stage was the full read, and it also meant that I would be getting a full report. And then I thought, oh, okay, great, and I don't particularly remember remember that email. I remember that then I got another email and said, you know, then we will be, well, it might, your piece, if we don't like it, may go to the final stage, which is when you actually meet all the executive producers and filmmakers from the BBC. So I remember that. And my piece didn't particularly... well, my piece didn't go to the final stage, we're meeting physically the people, but it was in the final 100 out of, I think, 4,000 plays, to be quite honest. So it was on the final shortlist, and which was amazing. I got that full report, and I was very, very excited about it because, you know, when I got that report... I actually thought, oh my God, I mean, did I actually write a play like that? Because it's kind of different when you write things and then someone reads it and they gives you their interpretation of it. And then I was really, really just, wow, I couldn't believe what they wrote because they were very, very complimentary. It was very positive And I couldn't believe it that, you know, it was in the 100 plays out of 4,000. It was unbelievable. And, you know, I wasn't also unhappy about the fact that it didn't go to the final stage, which is meeting the people, because I actually felt that it is not an easy read. My solo piece is not an easy piece to read, and it's not easy to suss it out. I think you need to see it in performance. So I was really, really pleased that what it was, and that was a huge achievement for me, and I was ecstatic. It was incredible for me to be acknowledged and then you know, appreciated, and finally knowing that someone got it, that someone understood what I was trying to say. Well, it was that person or these people, these readers that read my piece, which was a huge relief, to be quite honest. And all of a sudden, you know, when things like that happen, you just forget about everything that happened before, all these rejection emails and or non-emails or emails that you didn't receive or people didn't reply to, or people that gave you very confusing feedback. That really I completely forgot about it. I didn't. That goes just right away. Goes, and I just focused on the positivity and the excitement, and you know, that acknowledgement, and you kind of also forget that, you know, it was like, wow, nearly 8 years, 8 years of kind of tweaking, redrafting, and that finally came to fruition, and that was amazing. I really couldn't believe it when they sent me that email. And you also go and you think, wow, it's also because of the people that helped me, and Peter and George and Linda, and even people who helped me with that initial development, and Amanda and Catherine, and people who believed in me, and that was Hugh Hodgett and Tristan Sharps. Wow, all these people, you just remember them for supporting you and helping you, and it was incredible, and I was really, really pleased, and it was great. And of course they part of the whole thing, and you know, being on the shortlist, they, you know, the BBC, they invite you to their headquarters in Holborn. It's in Oxford Street, sorry, near Oxford Street. So I went over there, they had like drinks and food, and you know, you meet all these people. It wasn't like a one-to-one meeting with all the execs and filmmakers and developers, but it was developing executives, whatever they call them. It was just like a meet and greet, and you met all the people that were shortlisted and longlisted, and there was a little bit of a talk, and then there were drinks and food, which was great and lovely. I think it's amazing that they do things like that. However, I'm not particularly a big fan of networking networking. I mean, I, you know, people may think that I'm very open and happy and, you know, jolly and smiley and, you know, everything. Well, maybe I am, but I find it very, very, I don't know, something unsettling, or I don't know what that is. I feel very uncomfortable in situations like that when, you know, you go over there and you speak to people and it's kind of like they know you, but they don't know you, and you know, you don't know each other's work, and everyone is kind of like, oh, okay, are you on the long list and or short list? And I'm like, I was on the short list, and you are, oh, I was on the long list. And then, you know, even when you meet people, it's kind of interesting, because then you go, oh, you know, hello, I'm this person, I've did, and then you go, oh yeah, so what's this piece about? And then someone else comes and go, oh, would you like, you know, a cheese sandwich or a ham sandwich or champagne? Yeah. And they go, yeah, let's go for that. Oh, hello, how are you doing? Go, oh, this is what, sorry, what was your name? My name's Remy. Oh, this is Jason. And oh yeah, sorry. Oh yeah, who are you? Sorry, I'm just going to leave you to it. It never ends. I mean, so it's kind of, I prefer always meetings kind of one-to-one, because I always like to focus on that person, and it's kind of more of a connection rather than just, you know, you're mingling with the crowd. I don't know. You don't know these people. They don't know you. God, no, I don't know. I mean, networking, definitely not for me, to be quite honest. I don't know. I don't find it very comfortable. I feel very uncomfortable in situations like that. So anyway, I went over there. I was very, very grateful, and I've been very, very grateful for the help and the support and the fact that they've enjoyed my piece. And that was kind of the end of the journey for me as far as writing the piece is concerned, because that was the kind of the when I treated now the way or the moment where I felt, okay, that means that the piece is locked. I mean, I'm not really touching the piece anymore. That's it. I won't be kind of going back to it. It was this kind of a stamp of approval that the intuitive version that I came up with was the right version. And it also, that shortlist also for me was important to go back with that feeling of that intuitive voice, to go, okay, I felt it should be like that. I was not going to listen to anyone else, what people were going to tell me or not tell me, or, you know, advise me to do or not to do. I always believed that voice was very, very important, and I need to kind of protect that voice and always listen to it, because you never know, you know, what's going to happen. But it always, that was the moment where I felt, you know what, that I think I should just listen to that, to my intuition. And it actually is going to be quite important in future episodes when I'm going to talk about more about that intuitive voice, because it really guided me in a lot of directions that were extremely helpful, even maybe touch upon it a little bit at the end of this podcast. So that was April 2017. Then, you know, the when I went to the headquarters, that was in May. And then really, I didn't much think about my solo piece for quite some time. I think I felt a little bit tired from all redrafting and doing certain things, and I really wanted to have a little bit of a break from it all. So I just needed a proper reset from even thinking about it. Also around the time, I got a phone call that we would be reviving Lucia de Lammermoor at the Royal Opera House, and that was November 2017. I just remember one more thing. I never mentioned what the report said, the BBC, because I actually can't find it, to be quite honest. But it was very complimentary. So So Lucia de Lammermoor revival at the Royal Opera House would be happening. I knew that already in April 2017, which was very, very exciting, because I loved performing in it back in 2016. I still love it. They were actually to revive it last year, which was actually very interesting, because We did it. The original production was in 2016, and they already revived it in 2017. There was to be another revival in 2020. So two revivals in 4 years, that's quite a lot. That's what people said. I never knew how it works. But yes, great production. I absolutely loved it, and I love it. And even if they said to me today, Remy, we're performing, we're doing Lucia de Lammermoor tomorrow, I'm on it. I'm doing it. The way it was done and the way Katie kind of came up with this idea of split stage and doing it, beautiful. Amazing. I'm so grateful. And also another degree of my dream came true working with Katie Mitchell, because she was also present in during the revival. That was great. And what can be better than that? That working with people that you respect and you love, and you respect them as artists and what they create, and going back to the rehearsal room and just being creative and getting paid for that. That was great. And I always say, and although, you know, it probably should be another podcast episode on that, but I always say to people, if you like someone else's work, if you respect them, if you like what they do, write to them, tell them about it, tell them that you would like to work with them, because you never know. I mean, that was with me. I wrote to Katie, and I told her about you know, my respect and what she created and how much I admired her work. And there it was. All of a sudden, a couple of years later, I am in a rehearsal room with her. I mean, that was just insane. And I still can't believe it, to be quite honest. But anyway, so coming back to that revival, I knew that already in April. And then in October, I was slowly preparing for that. Now, it's going to be quite an important period from my solo pieces point of view, and I'm going to touch upon it in a couple of minutes. So, as you might know, I mean, you may think, okay, how does the revival work with opera? It's very interesting because actually there were four actors performing, so we were all, well, three of us were the same actors that performed in the original production. There was one extra actor, a new actor that joined us, but the singers are new, so it's not the same singers like in the original production. So new singers, and then of course we went into rehearsals, and the rehearsals were 5 weeks, and then we go into performances. Now, what's interesting about the opera is, unlike theatre, where you actually perform every single day, or you do two performances a day, with the opera you perform maybe twice or once a week, because the singers, their voices need to rest. But what's amazing for the actors, there's this wonderful agreement between Equity and the Royal Opera House that for the actors, although you only perform once a week, you get paid the full week. So it's just, for me, it was amazing. I mean, I just went to do two performances a week at the Royal Opera House, and I got paid the full Equity's rate weekly. I mean, I just couldn't imagine it any other way. And well, initially I didn't know that, but you know, when I did the original production, I didn't know how it works. But then when we were preparing for the revival, I kind of knew, wow, it's going to be great, because I'm going to be in that bubble of being creative and doing things. And of course, it's kind of similar thing to what we did before, but I always loved that moment of, you know, being there, being with other artists and creatives and just being creative. I love that, and I still do. But I also thought, okay, well, when I perform, I just don't want to just go back to work, and I never actually do, to be quite honest. When I perform, or when I did the opera, when I had a day off, I never did any interpreting. I just wanted to have that wonderful memory of performing and doing it and having fun and enjoying it and just doing what I want, rather than be running around from Stratford, Archway, Holborn, Stratford again, and doing a production in the evening. I never wanted that. Whenever I work on a project, I never do any other work. I always want to enjoy the whole process. And that was the same, that was the same with the revival of Lucia di Lammermoor in 2017. So what I thought was, I thought, okay, I've got a couple of weeks, 5 weeks of, we'll be performing the opera, and then I'll have free time. And then I'm always very active, and I'm always thinking, okay, what else can I do? And there was this idea that I had, and that was that maybe I'll just translate The Visitor, because that was the title of the solo piece then, into Polish. Why don't I do that? Because then I thought, well, my parents are Polish. They're in the solo piece. I would like them to see it in Polish, to understand it fully. And also, I thought there were so many Polish people in the UK. Maybe I can, maybe I can do it in Polish as well. Not only doing it in English, but also doing it in Polish. Why not? And that was, I think, if not the best decision that I ever made about the solo piece, to be quite honest. But I'm just planting that seed now, and I'm going to elaborate on it a little bit later on, because I think it's very, very important. But it was during that performance, that kind of period, these, performances of the revival of the Lucia di Lammermoor, that I came up with that idea of kind of translating my solo piece into Polish. And I worked on it during the day, and I went to coffee shops, or I actually translated it, in my dressing room at the Royal Opera House. So I just really wanted to stay creative and do it and just have fun with it. So that was around that period that I started working on it, and I think I completed it, because it's not a very long piece. It's only, I think, 40 pages. So it was quite straightforward for me. Now, I never kind of really touched upon what my play is about. I never talked about it. So I really don't want to give too many details about it, or give any spoiler alerts in case anyone ever sees it or comes to see it, and I would be delighted if you did. So my solo piece is autobiographical. So it talks about a guy that moves to Scotland from Poland to make his dreams come true and become an actor, but is a victim of a few traumatic events that happened to him in Scotland, that is muggings and assaults that actually impact on his mental health, and because of that he can't really make his dreams come true. So that is one thing. So also the piece is about mental health and anxiety and post-traumatic stress disorder, and how you deal with it and how you move on with your life and how you overcome it to fulfill your potential and how you make your dreams come true. Also, there is an element of fate or chance in to what respect we can control what happens to us, and can we control it? I mean, is it meant? Can we do something about it? That's also an element of it in the piece. But also there is a restorative justice system that I touch upon in the previous episodes. There is an element of being kind to each other, being kind to each other. I just had a little bit of a pause thinking whether I should tell more, but I think if I said more, that'll be like a little bit of a spoiler alert, so I'm not giving too many details about the solo piece. But that, these are some of the elements that are in the piece. It's bilingual, it's non-linear, a lot is going on in the piece. So it's the end of 2017, coming back to the end of rehearsals for performances of the revival, which is great. And I have wonderful memories, and I still keep in touch with the singers and with the actors. I love these people, wonderful memories. And also at the same time, I was thinking, okay, well, you know what, maybe it's the time to actually maybe think of where where I could perform it and do it. And I've always imagined doing my solo piece at the Fringe in Edinburgh. I thought, well, and I always feel that the piece belongs to Scotland because it's set in Glasgow and in Edinburgh, and I lived over there for so many years. So for me, organically, it felt like, well, I would love it to premiere it in Edinburgh, because I always believed that the piece belongs to Scotland, because, you know, there were wonderful things that happened over there, and there were some things that were not that great that happened over there. So that was it. And immediately, the only person that I went back to was Amanda Gohan. And as you might remember my previous episodes, Amanda was a director that I met while studying at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. She was in my year. She was doing directing. I was doing acting. I don't really think there is many courses like that at the moment where you can, you know, you can do both in one year, which I think is great, because you don't really hear a lot of like courses where they do directing. And Amanda was very talented, and when she graduated, she did amazing things, and we were in touch, and she was already helping me with the development of my solo piece back in 2012 when we got funding from Creative Scotland. So she knew the piece, and I was always in touch with her. She was a very good friend of mine. And then I told her about the BBC Writers' Room shortlist. I sent her the intuitive version, the final draft. And then when she came to London, we had a discussion about it, and she said she loved it and she would like to be involved. So I thought, wow, that's amazing. I mean, you know, it's great. It's looking great. And, you know, we can actually maybe start thinking about the Fringe 2018, because it was, I think we met about November and 2017 and kind of chatted about it when she came to London, because her boyfriend was living in London at the time. And she said, why don't we do it? And then I already knew that, well, she has a couple of people that she normally works with, so it's going to be quite interesting, and she's probably going to bring them on board, which is great. And I always believed in her because, you know, she produced amazing work. And she worked on a lot of new writing, and so she was very, very experienced with new text and directing. I mean, amazing director. So that was just looking very, very promising. You know, Amanda on board, and then these versions, and the BBC Writers' Room shortlist. So when I kind of think about, you know, 2017, now I'm looking back at the end of 2017, I kind of went, wow, it's been an amazing year, because, you know, redrafts and the shortlist, and then the Polish version, and then Amanda coming on board, and that was it. And that was the plan for 2018. It was like, really, really, wow, it's going to be amazing. We're going to do wonderful things. We're going to perform it and produce it. And also, I wanted to submit it to a Polish competition in Gdynia. I think it was a theatre. I wanted to submit... oh, yes, I now know why. That was the other reason why I wanted to have the Polish version. I wanted to have the Polish version not only because of what I said before, but also because there was a competition in Poland for a play, and I knew that the deadline was the 31st of December, so I also knew that, okay, I need to do it. So there was another reason. So there was really quite a lot of things to be looking forward to, that, you know, 2018 was going to be quite an exciting year for all of us. But what I didn't know was that this is what we were planning, and this is what I was thinking, but, well, 2018 had a different plan for us. Well, for me, for Amanda, for Intruder, to be quite honest. There will be more drama coming in episode 13 of Intruder Theatre in the Making podcast. Loads will be happening in the next episode for sure. But also what I wanted to talk about is, this is really... this episode, I think, marks some kind of a... ending to my journey with the piece and with the podcast so far, because Now I focused a lot about writing and these playwriting competitions and how I redrafted and how I have, you know, dealt with feedback and how certain people helped me. And this is really the end of it. I won't be talking much about writing anymore, or, you know, what happened and how, any playwriting competitions. I'm now going more into being proactive and doing things. And because when I reflected and I was preparing for the episode, I thought, wow, we're now entering a completely different stage of actually doing the show and working on it and working on the full production and producing it and crowdfunding and getting money and writing applications and doing social media. So I think what you as the listener can expect from now on is slightly different approach. It's going to be, I think, a more, I think not that it's not been exciting or interesting. I think it's going to be even more interesting. There will be more drama. Drama as an exciting thing, I think, you know, when maybe people can learn how I went about different things, how different things happened, how certain creatives came on board, how certain creatives just left the project, and how I found certain people. That's going to be interesting. So that's coming up next in the next well, a couple of episodes, or, you know, it's going to be quite a different journey from now on, but definitely more drama to come in episode 13 of Intruder Theatre in the Making podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Stay well, stay safe, and I'll speak to you next time. And yes, I'm done with that episode, and I've done it. I can't actually believe it that I recorded it for 31 minutes straight without many fuck-ups, to be quite honest. If I did fuck up, I'm sorry about that. So speak to you next time. Bye for now.